Welcome to the last day of the workshop. This is our last session of talks, and first up is Matthias Durten. Take it away, Matthias.
Yeah, hope you can hear me okay. If not, complaints, please. Yeah, so many thanks for having me. Like I sort of had feelings like Stefan Lauritsen, and that this is sort of a pretty cool and unique opportunity, but it was difficult for me to get away with family and also, but thanks for letting me participate nevertheless. So when I first got the invite, I thought, okay, so causality and so on and so on. So latent variable models are always the important theme. So I thought I'd talk about just the most recent thing that we've done and that is out. And this is sort of criteria for identifiability of latent variable models. But then as I was listening to talks this week, I thought that, so there's been a lot of focus on figuring out inequalities and an implicit description of different latent variable models. And I gradually somehow gravitated to the idea that I should be maybe talking a bit about something else. And so then finally yesterday, I reached the point where I then worked on some putting together slides based on a little bit older projects, but that are more about implicit descriptions of models. So let me just start in terms of what I'm actually talking about in the general setting. So this paper that I've announced I would be talking about is this one. It came out end of last year in print. And then the first line of the abstract says that I'm talking about linear structural equation models with latent variables. And so this will stay the theme, even though I'm going to change away from this particular project. So if you happen to be interested in this one, at some, I'm not sure when exactly it was, but in the online causal inference seminar, I did speak about that one at some point last spring, I think. So the setup is in a way it's the same, but it's also of course very different than what is perhaps of direct interest in physics now in this group. Namely, I'll be talking about latent variable models, causal models, or structural equation models. But now I'm going to do it with continuous variables and the special setting of having linear relationships. So all relationships between variables will be linear. And so the types of examples is again this IV model that was shown many times already, where I think about then ultimately three observed variables here: tax rate, mom smoking, baby weight. I have a DAG in which I also display a latent confounder called L1. And now in terms of the models that I want to talk about or that I've been looking at for a long time now, is linear structural equation models. So models that would say each variable, each random variable that appears as a node in the graph is linearly dependent upon other variables, its parent variables. And so I get equations like X2 is a linear function of X1 here and the latent confounder. And then this is made stochastic by addition of a noise term. And then as we usually do, everything starts at the joint distribution level with the independent errors that enter these noisy functional relations. And then once you solve the equations, you get an interesting joint distribution out for the random variables that are here on the left-hand side of the equations. And the possible joint distributions you can get out by varying the coefficients in the equations and by varying aspects of the distribution of these noise terms, then this is my model, my structural equation model, linear structural equation model is associated to such a graph here. Now, all I'm going to talk about is at the level of second moment. So I'm only going to talk about covariance matrices that come out of this. So we could view this, I'm talking about Gaussian models, or I'm talking about just covariance structures. So the parameters that I have then always are for each node, I have a noise term, and this noise term has some variance, some positive finite variance. And then I will have edge weights, essentially, that are these coefficients that appear in these linear equations. Yeah? And so in the paper that gives the title, the topic of the work was If we have a larger system that is described by a DAG, now some of the variables remain unobserved. Is it possible to recover from the covariance matrix of what's observed various edge coefficients of interest? And of course, we know in this instrumental variable model under linear functional relationships, you can do that. For instance, you get this guy as a this lambda 2-3 guy as a quotient of two covariances. Now, as I said, I've listening to everybody's talks. Shameless advertisement. So if you're interested in methods in terms of recovering and making this decision, are coefficients recoverable from the joint distribution? We have a package software that does this in terms of letting you specify a structure in terms of a DAG whose node set is partitioned into latent and observables. And then you can run a simple command on it, and it will provide you information about what edges are can be certified as identifiable with the methods that are described in this paper that I'm not talking about. Okay, now, so then I said, actually, maybe I want to talk about something else. So I thought I'll talk about these two papers, which maybe are unfindable in terms of thinking about causal things. So one paper appeared in the SIAM Journal of Matrix Analysis and its Applications, 2010, so a little bit older. And the other appeared 2015 in a special issue in the journal Linear Algebra and its Applications, special issue on statistics. And so this left-hand pipe paper here is effectively, from a point of view of this workshop, it's studying, it's asking the same types of questions of inequalities and implicit descriptions of causal models, however, in this context of linear models, okay? Linear structure equation models. This left-hand paper has a very basic canonical setting where essentially there's no effects among observables. And this one on the right, then we did a little bit of follow-up and generalized some ideas. So I think we had already one comment about selection effects that is effectively very related to what I'm going to show you now, where Thomas Richardson gave a pointer to, I think, a paper of Stefan, perhaps, about constraints in under selection. But I got interested in this problem of figuring out the precise set of correlation matrices that can come from latent variable models. When I learned from Thomas, right, who was my advisor, about this example here, this three cycle, which is also discussed in his paper with Peter Spertes on ancestral graph Markov models. And so the starting point for this paper that I had shown on the left in the SIAM journal with Josephine Yu was this bidirected three cycle, I'm going to call it here. So we've seen some notation in various talks with mixed graphs and bidirected graphs and so on. But so if I dissolve it in terms of including latent variables, so the question of interest then was when reading these older papers, what exactly are the 3x3 correlation matrices that you can get out of this model here? So you have three observed variables that are in gray, 1, 2, 3. So they're indexing random variables x1, x2, x3. And these all are dependent on latent variables. So there's another set of three latent variables that correspond, in a way they form confounding pairwise between any pair of observed variables. And so there's one latent confounder, and everything is linear in terms of the way the variables depend on the latent confounders. And then so X1, for instance, would now depend on two latent variables, the one that connects it, the confounder with respect to two, and the confounder with respect to three, and then there's noise on top of that. And so then I think this may even be in the book by Peter Spertes et al. On causation prediction and search. So they had an example essentially showing that you cannot have arbitrarily strong correlations in this model, okay? And I think I need to flip on. Okay, so in the late 90s, right? So Peter Spertes and his colleagues, so they had these papers observing that here's an example of a correlation matrix with large entries. I think they may have one with like 0.9, 0.9, 0.9 for the three correlations. And they say this cannot possibly come out of this model. And then in the ancestral graph paper by Thomas Richardson and Peter Spertis, they had this comment that, okay, these types of models with explicit latent variables, they cannot always produce all correlations. So they produce some open set of correlation matrices, but they don't give you everything, even though there's no equality constraints holding here, but they don't give you the full set of all positive definite 3x3 correlation matrices. And in Thomas's paper, there was this comment that, okay, no, you don't get everything out of this model. Not all correlations can be large. And then so he quoted, so one can show by direct calculation that it's not possible that all three correlations between 1, 2, 1, 3 and 2, 3 are larger than 1/√2. Okay. And so then I wanted to know what exactly is this set of correlation matrices. So then we started on that. And this you can improve the comment that Thomas made. That's not too hard. You can, for instance, show that it has to be that at least one correlation is at most a half. Okay, so you can do things like you add up the diagonal entries and play a little bit with sums of squares, and you can see that. And this is in our paper. But then I wanted to know really what exactly is this set of correlation matrices. And this is our solution that we're then able to work out. So so people talked about quantifier elimination. So I haven't tried this in the last, say, couple years. But at the time when we started working on this, one could do things like in a computer algebra system, you could do things like give me a specific correlation matrix and maybe ask about membership if it's filled with numbers. But if you were to ask any sort of question that keeps the correlations themselves as variables to compute with, and then you try to quantify eliminate, that's way beyond what we can do in our with any reasonable amount of computation. So now we were able to resolve this particular. We were able to solve this particular problem now. And the equation is, there's one inequality that is characterizing precisely when a positive correlation matrix is in this model. And this inequality looks like a determinant a little bit, right? So it's like, you imagine you have a correlation matrix that has ones on the diagonal, and it has these correlations off diagonally. So when you start looking at the determinant, you see almost this, except that this should be a plus and not a minus. Okay. Obviously, a positive definite matrix would have a positive determinant, but given that this is a minus and not a plus, this is an actual inequality that can be violated. And this really characterizes this model. Okay. Okay. So then, how did we show this? And maybe this is one of the most important things I'm going to say here is so how can you show this? So in order, so I have to convince you, right, of two things. So I have to convince you that on one hand, if you give me a matrix that comes out of this model, a correlation matrix, then I have to show you that this inequality holds. And then I have to also explain to you that if the inequality holds, then I can indeed write this positive definite matrix in this form. So this is the way the model parametrizes covariance matrices. Okay. In terms of the meaning of the parameters here, so this gamma one would be the variance of the noise term in the linear function that determines random variable x one, and then this gamma 1, 2 and gamma 1, 3. They would be the edges on these coefficients here, gamma 1, 2 and 1, 3. And then this would be the gamma 2, 1. And this was our notational convention. Okay. But so there's sort of one main trick that we used in all of this work. And that is a very simple trick, but it took me a little while to figure this out. So this was a bit of a longer running thing. Namely, what you can do is the following. So imagine, so first I'm going to show you necessity of this inequality. So imagine you have a correlation matrix, it's positive definite, and you can write it as a member of this model. That means you can represent it with a choice of real numbers, gamma 1, gamma 1, 2, gamma 1, 3, et cetera, in this form. Suppose I can do that. What I can do now is the following. So if I have this matrix, I can think about a complementary point in the model. And that's this. I'm going to use all the same parameters, all the same gamma parameters here that sit on the as edge weights in this graphical model. But I'm going to do one change. I'm going to take that gamma 1, 2 here, and I'm going to negate it. So I drew in this red minus here. So I'm going to replace gamma 1, 2 by minus gamma 1, 2. Then I get another matrix in my model. Okay. And if I look at how does this matrix differ from the original matrix I had, then you can track. So you can check, okay, I'm modifying gamma 1, 2. So clearly what I've done is I have here a correlation rho 1, 2. And in the other point, I have minus rho 1, 2. But everything else stays exactly the same. So all correlations stay the same. So then I can make the following argument. If I start with a correlation matrix that can be written in this form, and I negate one of its off-diagonal entries, so the 1-2 entry, for instance, then I get a new matrix that has to belong to the model. But every matrix in the model is positive definite. So it must be that when the original matrix is in the model, not only is it itself is a positive definite matrix, also have a positive matrix, definite matrix when you arbitrarily pick one off diagonal entry and you negate it. But not every matrix has this property. So for instance, if you take a matrix with very large correlations here, close to one, and you take one off diagonal entry and you negate it, then you end up with a matrix that's no longer positive definite. And so therefore, matrices with these large correlations, they would not be part of this model. And then the amazing thing was that this was somehow the right equation. So at some point we figured out this inequality, and then this was the right inequality to use. So having this inequality as an assumption that it holds, we were then able to do the right sort of little bit of polynomial algebra to show that under this, if this inequality holds, I can really find real numbers here that witness that the matrix belongs to the model. Okay, so there's a different step. Maybe I'll say a bit more about that later. But that's it, okay? I think intuitively it also makes some sense, right? That there's some constraint that rules out two large correlations in particular. Because if you think about intuitively, you're in a situation where if I want a strong correlation between 1 and 2, then how can I do that? Well, I can make 1 and 2 very much look like this latent confounder, right? So I can put sort of strong edge weights on here. But then I also, if 1, 3 are also highly correlated, then I also have to make 1 and 3 both look very much like this latent variable 1, 3. However, so 1 starts to have, there's a need to have 1 look like 1, 2 and 1, 3 at the same time, but they are independent. So this creates a tension between the independence of the latent variables that you're supposed to then be strongly related to, because to get a strong correlation across, that creates a tension with the fact that these latent variables are also independent. And this is sort of the intuitive explanation. Okay, so this is one example. And then we, of course, now that we could do this example, then we study it more. Maybe a word on motivation. So I was interested in this also merely from a sort of convenience point of view from statistics. So if you want to parametrize positive definite matrices with zeros, then this construction of taking a support pattern described by a graph and thinking about causal models with latent variables as a means of parametrizing matrices that are sparse is a very natural thing. And I wanted to know, to what extent can you fill a cone of sparse positive definite matrices with this parametrization? Okay. And so when we talked about other examples then, from this point of view of parametrizing sparse matrices, so in this paper, you will see the starting point is always some graph that I just drew undirected. And more generally, the starting point might be a simplicial complex, which is in a way, this is very similar to what then Robin did in his MDAG paper. So a simplicial complex, right, is a collection of subsets of a base set. So in this example, there's a base set with four elements, and the simplicial complex would be a collection of subsets of this four element set. And under the condition that with every element, with every subset, all its further subsets are in this complex. And so these simplicial complexes, they very naturally implement this idea that if you want to think about introducing latent variables, you can think about what should be the children of the latent variables, and then having such a simplicial complex here, for instance, makes clear what this should be. So if there's an edge between 1, 4, you would introduce a latent variable that confounds them. If there is an edge 1, 2, you would introduce one. And if there's a triangle 1, 2, 3 in the picture, that means you put a latent variable that has all three things as children. Okay. And so this is, if you read the paper, everything is in terms of this type of object on the left and not explicitly about the DAGs, because we were doing this math and it wasn't really necessary. But then there's a section at the end that explains that what we're doing in terms of graphical models. Okay, and so then what did we do in the paper? So in the paper, we dressed this up as a question of the goal is to parametrize these graphical cones. So there's a cone of positive definite matrices or the positive semi-definite matrices where the matrices are restricted by having zero entries wherever there is not an edge between two nodes in this graph G that I'm looking at. And this is an interesting thing to look at, these graphical cones, because they appear in various versions of problems in multivariate statistics and graphical modeling. And having parametrizations is what we focused on. That's, of course, useful for many tasks. But then also from the point of view of this workshop, in some ways, you guys are doing a lot of things about the problem of thinking about this as causal models of different kinds. Also, I'm not sure about the linearity in ever being relevant now in physics. But at any rate, so the question is, what about parametrizing these graphical cones? And this latent variable model approach gives a very specific parametrization. Namely, you would parametrize a positive semi-definite matrix with zeros given by a graph as a product of a matrix gamma with its transpose, where this matrix gamma has the rows are the observed variables and the columns are the confounders, the latent confounders that I introduced. So this can be a rectangular matrix. And the key feature is that this will be generally very sparse, right? In terms of in every column, a column corresponds to a latent confounder. A latent confounder has children, and only those children rows can have non-zero entries. Okay, and so we're doing exactly this type of thing. I want to know for this type of a DAG with latent variables, what kind of 4x4 matrices get parametrized by this. Okay. And so, for instance, you see that 2 and 4, there's no edge, right? So this will be in particular matrices where there's a 2-4 entry zero out of this construction. Okay, just to visualize this, since I had it, so if I were to start with a graph that's a 3-chain, 1, 2, 3, and the simplicial complex is really just the two edges, so 1, 2, and 2, 3 as sets, then this would be this matrix gamma that parametrizes then matrices that have a 1, 0 on the top. Okay, if you multiply this matrix to its transpose, you get a parametrization out that writes a matrix like this. And because never ever is there something in any column, never ever is there something with 1 and 3 together, there's a zero up here. And in this example, it's easy to show this mapping is surjective. So this is an easy case to handle. Then if we were go to back, so this is what we would present for this three cycle, this initial example that I motivated. And this is not surjective. I already showed you the inequality. And then, okay, so then we did a bit more, and this was then dressed up in a bit more perhaps mathy way, right? But What we have here is that these models that we get from these parametrizations, so these causal models at the level of correlation matrices and covariance matrices, so they are always these linear causal models, they always give us covariance matrices or sets of covariance matrices that are closed convex cones. And the extreme rays are given by rank one matrices, who in turn are given by vectors V, so VV transpose, where these vectors V are supported on cliques in the graph. So these are where everything is confounded together. Okay. And and so if we have any sort of these cones of sparse matrices, these graphical cones, then it'll always be the case that if you look at all rank one matrices in them and you form the convex hull, this would be these models that we propose when we are really as aggressive as can be in terms of introducing latent variables. So we confound everything that can be confounded. So we introduce a latent variable for every clique in this considered graph. Okay, and so then there turned to be out a nice connection to a concept called sparsity order that was considered in prior literature that we then became aware of. And either by elementary means or by going through this these results on this concept of sparsity order, let me just first jump to this corollary. We can prove then things like this. So if we have one of these latent variable models, then we know it parametrizes a certain set of, it produces as an output a set of sparse correlation matrices. And again, so in these latent variable models I'm considering right now, there's no direct effects among observables. And this mapping is surjective. It really gives me every sparse covariance or correlation matrix that's possible. That happens precisely when the graph that I'm starting with is chordal, so decomposable, free of chordless cycles of length four or longer. And when I do when I write out the latent variable model, I think about every clique in this graph and I introduce a latent variable for it. So this is a bit like in these MDAX, right, that Robin discusses. Okay. The sparsity order, maybe I should say what this is. So if you take the set of matrices that are sparse over graph and positive semi-definite, then you can think about the extremes rate it has, and the sparsity order of a graph is the maximal rank of any matrix giving us an extreme ray. Okay. And this is the generalization that we could prove. This is in some way our main result. So we could prove that if instead of this three cycle, we did an arbitrarily long chordless cycle, then we have an inequality that generalizes what I wrote down previously. And it's simply obtained from this fact that it's, again, I'm in a situation where I can make this argument that if a correlation matrix is in this model, it will be sparse. It will have an interesting set of correlations circling around. And if I grab any of one of these off-diagonal non-zero correlations, I negate them, the matrix has to stay positive definite, okay? And in order to prove this, so this is easy to prove in the same thing as what I showed for the negation with the three cycle. And to turn it around, we have to solve the problem of you give me a matrix that satisfies an inequality that I claim holds on the model. And then you have to show me that you can find parameters that actually witness that this matrix is a member of the model. And that takes a little bit of effort, but is just within reach because these are quadratic equations. So this requires some tinkering, but this inequality that I showed you becomes a discriminant for degree four equations. So quadratic equations in the squares of these parameters. And it just does the right thing to make sure that there's a real solution that that shows us then that it's in the model. Okay, so we can also look at to what extent when you have a cycle where every pair of variables is confounded, and you make that cycle longer and longer, you could ask: is this model filling more and more of The space of sparse positive definite matrices, or is it filling less and less? And so as the as here, this is by computation. We computed so by simulation spherical volumes of the images of these models, these as sets of correlations or covariance matrices. And this sort of, as you make the cycle longer, this volume grows. So in some ways, the inequalities are, they make the most restrictions when you have a relative short cycle of pairwise latent confounding. And then in this paper, the second paper, we sort of continued on, and then I wanted to do a more explicitly discuss this connection between these types of MAG models that Robin talked about on the first day. So this custom of working with linear Gaussian models based on mixed graphs that are latent projections, where you project out latent variables and you subsume them in errors. And then models like this one on the right-hand side, they postulate simply that there's confounding, and this confounding is captured as error terms are correlated in some way. But then if you think about it, where does this come from? Well, it must come from some latent variables, really. That's what you think. And so then I wanted to ask, can I study to some extent, at least, for which types of pictures on the right can I actually find a DAG with latent variables like on the left, so that the latent variable model with these explicit latent variables models is equal to the model that is associated to this graph on the right-hand side, where I simply say errors are correlated in arbitrary ways, essentially, or errors get correlations of essentially arbitrary size. Okay. And then just to flash this at you, so then we can prove things like, so if you have any acyclic mixed graph and the bidirected part is chordal, then we can prove that this model, this normal linear model, is strictly causal in the sense that I can really find a latent variable model that gives me the same precise set of correlation matrices as this mixed graph model. And the other way around, generalizing a bit from this cycle story, if you give a mixed graph that is a chain graph, so it's free of semi-directed cycles, and where there's one bidirected edge and the rest is a directed a path, in that case, I can say that I'm achieving this equality to a latent variable model if and only if the bidirected part is chordal. So for these types of graphs, they're relatively easy to study. It's just break things apart into conditionals. And then you're back to this story that I had in the previous paper with these cycles. And if there's a chordless cycle of length 4 or longer, we can write down this sign trick argument in the right way in a more complicated graph to argue that the model is then different. Okay, so then this is my conclusion then for now. I think I'm somewhat in time. So I wanted to just showcase these papers because I think they're, in a way, this is the same question that is often asked this week. It's just that in this realm of linear structure equation models. And so you can correct me, but my impression is that in some ways, me talking about this is not of immediate interest to physicists as it stands, because you don't do you don't formulate theories in the way that you were in a linear realm, perhaps, with latent variables. But what I was wondering about is perhaps it's possible that some of the tools you guys have on the physics end in terms of studying inequalities maybe find some way to be mirrored in this context here, so that we can understand a little bit better in which sense linear Gaussian models with latent variables are constraining sets of correlations that are possible. Okay. And maybe a bottom question that I had is something that I thought was also so in the paper, last paper I wrote about a causality index, which I used as a term to say, like, you know, if I can tell you that a model is indeed, so one of these mixed graph models, like Robin was also talking about, is indeed equal to some model with latent variables, how many latent variables do I really need for that? Minimally, I think it's that I thought was also an interesting question. But anyway, it's okay. So that's it. So I wanted to present these older pieces and just see what people might think. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Thanks, Matthias. Yeah, I'm getting curious now because this is a systematic approach for the latent variable and for the Gaussian PDF. But I mean, there's a similar thing on the dual, which is for the concentration matrices. And in this paper that you quote that I have from 1998, I have a very simple example where I just show that in this particular example, there is an inequality that sort of the trace has to be larger than some of the off-diagonal elements in absolute value. And I just wonder, I guess one could do the same game as you do here, just for the concentration matrix and look at the model after conditioning it, and that is after postulation. And I wonder whether you can sort of, just like that, tell us whether your way of solving it would actually work so that
Yeah, I think if we talk about an underexic graphical model,
doing it next week, right?
Sorry?
You can have a student doing it next week, I thought.
I think it's exactly dual, right? So if I instead of having every pair of nodes a latent variable that is the parent, I could have a selection variable that is the child, right? I think this is what we're talking about, Stefan, no? And,
yes.
And in that would be then at least at the level of a cycle. That would be then I think the exact same algebra. I think I thought this in the past, and then I never did anything about it because I thought it's the same. But then I think maybe if we find more general graphs, it might be a bit different potentially. I think
that the inequalities are different because they do not contain quadratic terms. It becomes an inequality between the trace and the sum of the absolute values. In the specific example that in this little paper that you quoted, I mean, I just have an example where I see that it's not everything.
I do derive
the necessary and sufficient inequality for a specific graph, which is the four cycle. It's not a determinant like yours. Mm-hmm. Doesn't look like a determinant. It's more.
Interesting. Yeah, somehow at some point I thought that this is a sort of identical question, more or less, but then maybe I should have done something about it actually. Okay. But this sign trick is sort of it's convenient in other ways. So I used it for studying models with feedback cycles. So if you have a three cycle in these linear structure equation models, a directed three cycle, and you wonder, is that the full set of all 3x3 correlation matrices? Then you can do exactly the same sort of sign trick and you get the same type of inequality. So this was also useful for some purpose.
The inequality that I get is also obtainable by sign change.
But it looks a bit different, you think? Okay.
Yeah. So I think there is a question from Richard on Zoom. Is that right?
Yes.
I find this really intriguing. In particular, I think I'm a bit intrigued by this sign trick. Can you comment on why that specific trick or symmetry would just suffice to derive the necessary inequalities?
I don't know. So we did this paper, right? But I think I had I looked at this three cycle for a while, and then I computed and examples and so on and so on, and then at some point, so I'm a hopeful guy, right? So then at some point I had this inequality, then I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna hammer the other side and just gonna try and see. And then it was possible to show that this is really it. But I'm not quite sure why this simple thing gives you the right perfect description of these models with these cycles. I'm not quite sure why that really is. I mean, I understand there's this tension, right, between the independence of the latent variables and having strong correlations at the same time between all variables. But that's intuitive to me. But why changing this sign is giving the full description of the model, that I'm not sure I have a good intuition for that.
So then maybe have you ever used a found it to be insufficient in other cases?
Say again, sorry.
Have you applied to somewhere else and found to be not giving you complete description?
So it works in these cases where you have a very sparse setting, or once you have a lot of direct effects between observables, there is no way to do this sign change. You can change the sign of certain coefficients, but then it's very difficult to control what sort of matrices do you get out. And it's very difficult to argue that this new matrix that you get out is some relatively simple function of the matrix you started with. So it's a bit because these are highly overparametrized models when you have so many latent variables. So there's no good way of uniquely then mapping from the original correlation matrix to the new correlation matrix that comes after sign chains. I mean, maybe if one understands this better, there could be again something, but I don't know how to do that. So for this cycle, it's evident, right? You do the sign change and you see, all I needed to do is take the original matrix and negate one entry, and I get the result what I get from the sign change. But for more general models, I don't know how I can express the entries of the new correlation matrix as a function of the old correlation matrix.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thanks.
Matthias, I have a comment which is going to lead me into a question. There's a work that I'm familiar with by Aditya Akila, Rafael Chavez, and some others. I linked to it on Slack, which seems to be a bunch of quantum physicists rediscovering exactly what you're talking about. So they define covariances, they show that there are implications in these sort of like three bidirected cycle. Classical causal models that the positive semidefiniteness implies constraints on the covariances. And what's interesting is that the constraints derived in this paper, they don't cite you, so I think they just don't know about your work.
Yeah, nobody cites this paper, so I wanted to present it.
I'm glad. Like this is definitely stuff that we're interested in. Does not make any assumptions about linear Gaussian models. They just say like you have a latent variable model, and they then derive constraints on covariances as opposed to on parameters of the model. But it's, I think, the same technique. What I guess worries me is that there were like a first paper which is found these inequalities on covariances, assuming sort of classical hidden variable models. And then there was another paper 2 years later which said, actually, this method of deriving inequalities on covariances coming from semi-definite programming turns out that those inequalities are also consistent with quantum causal models, which is, okay, cool, nice to know. But we also know that in the...
I also have a paper on this model, and we have proven with Salman that's using inflation. So even a more high level argument, it is also valid for any causal theory. So we have a proof of the validity of this decomposition in which, so we also have this sign tricks, and we really see it as a duality property. So you have two ways to express this condition. One, it's in the end, it's a scalar product between positive matrices. So you really have a duality property. And maybe we have a good understanding of what you're saying when you say, okay, there is this sign trick, I don't understand where it's coming from, where to apply it. Okay, it was hard for me to follow, but I guess that for some simple example, we have a good understanding of what it means and how it works, because our proof is coming from higher level argument of inflation.
So you should link to in the Slack and make sure the Matthias
has it. I think it's very interesting that we discuss it, but it's very hard for me to make the link right now like this.
So all of this then leads us to a question, though, which is, we know that in this bidirected three cycle, if you assume that the hidden variables are sort of treated in the usual sense, that like not just a linear Gaussian model, but just it is some real number and each of the observed nodes depends stochastically on some distribution for the hidden nodes, nothing more general than that, that the set of distributions that you could achieve in this kind of scenario is strictly not the same when we treat these hidden variables as classical systems versus when we treat them as quantum systems. But these kind of inequalities don't distinguish that. And it sounded to me like you were saying that you had this proof that your inequalities were not just necessary, but also sufficient. And I feel like we know that that can't be the case. So I'm just a little confused.
No, no, so it's sufficient for Gaussian,
Gaussian noise.
Yes.
But
linear.
And we have the proof of this in our paper also. So if you just, you will completely fill these inequalities with Gaussian noise.
Mark with the VA, is it just Gaussian noise or Gaussian noise and linear dependencies in your paper?
Well, maybe there is a linear term also, which I don't remember.
So just the,
For me, it was just Gaussian, but there is indeed maybe something linear, which...
If you tell me I'm going to explore a particular set of causal models, namely linear models with Gaussian errors, then if you're explicitly constructing models in the set, then of course you're going to satisfy the inequality. So like, what's the enveloping theory where you're exploring models
Only look at the covariance matrix and you hope to detect the model from this information only, okay? And then already Gaussian distribution, Gaussian models will fulfill the full set. So this criteria, you can see it as a way to detect the DAG, the network, right? The causal structure, because depending on the causal structure, you will see a difference. However, you cannot see it as a way to detect the physical model because, well, already Gaussian fulfills all what you can expect to see. Right?
Okay.
You will explore all the space of these matrices using Gaussian models. So actually, all these proofs are not always valid in all networks. So the proof we have using inflation, we just prove it for a subset of all networks, right? So DAGs with variables and latent variable and measurements, right? But we expect that, okay, it's just our proof, which is limited, right?
So this is a great conversation that I think we should continue, but maybe a bit later, because we should stick to our schedule and we have our next speakers. Let's thank Matthias again.